keeping it real on cliffcentral.com.
There you go. We're in the house. It's hey, Candace.
Hey, how are you? It seemed like it shocked you there. What happened?
It kind of shocked me because something happened that wasn't supposed to happen, but it happened anyway, and it's fine.
It's life.
And we're here.
We are here, and we are happy today.
How are you doing this Thursday?
Oh my gosh, I'm so good today. Last week we were in a bit of a slump. This week I'm so motivated. I'm so happy.
I'm feeling so much better this week. Like, I'm feeling lighter.
Tell me something. Did you end up figuring out that motivational quote? Because I went home, I discussed it, and I still don't know what a man sleeping on the floor means.
I listened again because I just thought to myself, let me go back to what it was and what we said about it and kind of what Slumko said about it.
Yes.
And I reckon it's exactly what you said the first time. So you were right the first time around. Which, yeah, I'm saying you're right.
I'm always right, but I'm so glad.
Let that be noted. Let that be put out there.
I will save
by
this forever.
The police who, I don't know what police they would be, the relationship police or whatever, that a man said a woman was right.
Wow.
And it really is, if you don't have much, you really don't have much to complain about, right?
It's so true.
I suppose.
Good.
So there you go. I was like, but that doesn't make any sense because that was the whole point. Like, we were complaining because there was a lot to complain about. And having nothing is part of it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
on to better.
How are you feeling, by the way?
I'm great. I was hit by the cold this week, but I'm good now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little congested, so I'm sorry, guys. But yeah, I'm good.
Okay, you're like backed up.
A little.
Okay.
Don't say backed up.
Well, let's welcome the listeners. How are you out there? And welcome to the
tweet
weekly
mashup.
Yeah. Tweet us. Please feel free. We've put it out there. Today, we're going to be talking to a couple of people in the studio. It's a very exciting show.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
First up, we're going to get a little bit of motivation just in case there is a lingering a bit of negative emotion about what happened last week.
I agree with you.
And then after that, we are going to talk about the South African film industry from the perspective of someone who's been in the States and themselves are a director.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have one of our favorites who's here.
Friend
and today,
to the show.
We're going to be talking about how you can use a legislation that's already available to you to get yourself some film financing if you are in the market to finance a film or you want to create a film and that sort of thing. So don't go anywhere.
It's
listen
an amazing
in
show.
And please write into us. But let's kick right off. Please introduce our first guest, Candy.
So our first guest is Shakes Dludu.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he
come
is
a little bit closer to the mic,
speaker.
Please, sir.
Don't be shy.
It won't bite unless you want it to.
Say hi, Shakes. Thank you for
Candace.
Being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
So you're a motivational speaker.
Well, that's the title that seems to sell. You know, what I do is a lot more than that, but that's the title that gets me the booking because that's the title that people understand.
What is the title, motivational speaker? You know, people say that a lot, and a lot of people nowadays are coming out and saying, I'm a motivational speaker too.
Yes.
But really, traditionally, what really is a motivational speaker?
Well, Timon, for me, what I do, I look at it this way. I remind people of their own greatness, you know, because life happens. We tend to get overwhelmed. We tend to get caught up on what happens in our lives. And then we forget who we truly are. That who we truly are is not the things that happen to us. Mm. It's who we choose to be every moment of every day. Our attitude, our beliefs, our thoughts. You know, so that essentially for me, that's what it's about. It's being conscious and being deliberate about what goes on my mind at every moment, every time. Sorry.
Okay, so basically you take that and you talk to people about it in either in groups or in one-on-one sessions.
Yep, I do many groups. I think the people that do one-on-one are called life coaches.
Okay.
I mainly specialize in team dynamics, in group dynamics, etc.
Okay.
And like, where does one go if they want to be a motivational speaker and they want to study something like that? Is there such a thing?
Well, I mean, I think in this day and age, you can go and study. Most people either go for psychology. Most people either go and do short courses in one of these institutions and so on. But for me, it's none of the above. What happened for me when I was in high school, I took part in a life skills program. When this was back in 1994, I think, just before I finished high school. So after taking part in this life skills program, it was a multiracial life skills program to try and address issues of racism in the country at the time, which seems to be still relevant to this day, if you ask me. They would choose 20 black kids, 20 sort of kids from the colored community, 20 Indian kids and so on, and make them form a group of about 60 or 80 students.
Okay.
And we will have weekend camps. And at these weekend camps, they will teach us things about self-esteem. They will teach us how to study, because at school, we were taught what to study, but not how to study. As a result, studying became a problem for us. And they will teach us about leadership skills, etc., etc. So as a result of that experience, I had such a kick out of that kind of material. And I said, this is what I want to do. So I took part in that particular process. And then we started developing some courses for corporates to try and uplift the morale of employees in the workplace.
Wow. Yeah. But tell me something. I mean, your job must be quite hard right now, especially in the current political climate and South African climate.
Yeah, it is.
So
it is.
How do you motivate groups that are saying, you know what, South Africa's going downhill, our president is always in the news, and... You know, how do you motivate people who are just like done, that are ready to check out?
Well, it's a very interesting phenomenon for me, because one of the things I believe, you know, as much as I'm called a motivational speaker, I really can't motivate you. Motivation becomes my responsibility, my own thing.
Okay.
What I do with my audiences, I share tools that have made a significant impact in my life, and I'm hoping by doing that it can do it the same in your own life.
Okay.
I've got a couple of programs I run. One is called Victim to Victor, which is about moving from a victim mentality into a victor mentality. The other one is this four-week course called The Mind Power, based on the same book of the same title. Now, I wish I can claim that it is my book. It's not.
Who's the book by
The book is written by John Kehoe.
Okay.
He's a Canadian man. I'm very privileged and honored to call this gentleman a mentor and a friend of mine.
Wow.
He has given me the rights to run the Mind Power course in Africa.
Okay.
Together with a colleague of mine, Robin Banks. In fact, we're busy running a course tonight at Hilton Hotel.
Is that for everyone?
That is
a
public one.
Booked?
Yeah. No. It's for everyone. You can come in at 6:30 at the Hilton Hotel.
Okay. In Sandton.
Here in Sandton, yes.
All right. Just one other thing. How did it come about that you got the rights to run John Kehoe's book?
Again, long story, but I'm going to try and shorten it for you.
Please.
So, Timesh. Now, because I'm in the kind of work that I'm in already, in personal development and so on, my friend, Robin, what happened initially, he got the rights to teach Mind Power. And through him, I got the rights to try and teach Mind Power in the rest of the continent, because Robin covers just South Africa. That is Cape Town, Durban, and Joburg.
Okay.
You know, he doesn't go to places like Bloemfontein, PE, Nelspruit, Limpopo, and Zorne. Okay, and that's where I have the rights to go.
Okay. Yep. Well, I can tell from the way you speak and your accent that you're a man from the Eastern Cape.
From the Cape.
Where in the Cape?
Crossroads, Cape Flats.
Really?
Yeah. Grew up in Cooksburg.
Okay, and that's an interesting story because a guy from the Cape Flats, you had to motivate yourself.
Absolutely.
Are those some of the things that, you know, self-motivation, are those some of the things that you give to other people? Like how you got out of that situation?
Absolutely.
And helping other people going from victim to victor.
Yeah. My story, Timesh, is a South African story.
Mm.
You know, it's not just unique to me. I grew up in an environment I did not like.
Yeah.
You know, you know Crossroads, how Crossroads was.
Mm.
And in fact, to a great degree, how Crossroads is to this day.
But
it's again what I was speaking to you earlier on about. It becomes a constant deliberate choice that I am aware that regardless of my circumstances, regardless of my situation, who I am inside is bigger than me.
All right.
You know, I was speaking to some kids in Soweto on the June 16. I think we call it Youth Day these days.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know what? I think and that's interesting because it should still be about June 16 because that's what it really was about.
Yeah.
And we're having these nice euphemisms nowadays to help us forget about the important things in our history and what we really went through. Anyway, what were you saying?
So I was chatting to these guys and my message to them, because this event happened in Soweto and there is an emotional attachment for a lot of them to that particular event. And I was saying to them, if we were to play a game and wake up the class of 76 just for a few seconds, and you allow them to look at us as young people of today, would they say, it was a cause worth dying for,
yeah.
or would they be embarrassed by the way you and I are choosing to live?
Wow.
Because they were complaining back then that they were not opportunities. As a result, they came together, stood together, mobilized themselves, and stood for a cause. And the question, my question to these young people was, what are you standing for in this day and age?
Yeah.
What is your cause? What are you prepared to lay your life down for? You know, for me, it becomes about really being deliberate, being intentional. We are surrounded by so much negativity.
Yeah.
We really, I mean, turn off the TV. In this country, I don't know in the rest of the world because I haven't traveled that extensively, but I know in South Africa, bad news sells.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
In this country, bad news.
I mean, I think it's a worldwide phenomenon that generally bad news sells. And I was reading somewhere that actually the media is more about just taking some bad news and selling that to us so that we're always feeling down.
Yeah.
And then from there, they can sell us something else. Even
true,
if it's just a political.
Absolutely. Whatever.
Even if it's just a political concept. Right?
Absolutely. True. Absolutely. You know, interestingly, John Keogh, the author of the Mind Power book, when he came down to South Africa a couple of years ago, he was having a radio interview like I'm having with now, with you guys now. In the middle of the interview, someone needed to come in and read the news, and then they were going to continue with the interview after. And John noticed that during the interview, every single item the reporter was speaking on was negative. So when she was done, he turned to her and said, do you mean to tell me that there's nothing positive that happened in South Africa today? And her response to him was, I'm sorry to say, but that those are the facts. I don't think those were the only facts.
No,
and
not.
To this day, I don't think that these are the only facts. But again, to my point, bad news, sir. Now you can choose to focus on them, or you can choose to focus on what's work. Forget the news. Same thing with our personal lives. There is a lot that does not work in my life. I can choose to focus on that, and there is a lot that's working in my life. Or I can choose to focus. So it becomes a choice. What am I going to expand in my life? I mean, there is a principle in science that says what you focus on expands. The more attention you give it, the bigger it gets. We seem to be giving attention to what's wrong, to what's not working, to what's, I don't know, horrible about our lives. And yet we've got so much that's working.
So what would you say is like the three steps or three things that you would want people to know and implement in their daily lives?
Be deliberate about what you allow into your headspace.
Okay.
Be very deliberate. Be very intentional.
Okay.
You know, I don't watch just any kind of program on TV. I use TV positively.
Okay.
Some people would tell you don't watch TV. I think there's some good things.
There is some good
depending
things.
Depending on what
I love
it is.
Discovery.
You know, you know, there's some positive things out there. You know, I mean, Candice, let me ask you this. Have you ever gone to a movie and laughed?
Of course.
Have you ever gone to a movie and cried to me?
Yes, I cry all the time.
You can admit it.
In fact, that's the only time I cry in movies.
Now,
that's when I allow myself because it's dark. I want to see.
Now, honestly, why do you think that is? Is it because they put something under your seats?
Of course.
Or is it because they put something into your mind that affects you emotionally?
Yeah.
That's why you either laugh or cry.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think happens when we watch what I call garbage television?
Like the news.
You know, exactly. I don't know what the news are going to be tonight, but I'm willing to bet my life 90% of them is going to be negative stuff.
It's okay, always negative. Negative, no, like 99%.
Exactly. But can I just inject it? Because I want to know then, we need to be informed about the environment we live in.
Absolutely.
So how are you going to be informed if you're not really watching the news? Because you, as negative as it is, you need to know
I
that
always
this is
get
what's
that.
Happening.
I always get that.
Yeah.
There's being informed and there's being inundated with stuff.
Okay.
You know, when 9/11 happened, I was not in front of a TV, I was not on my Facebook, but I heard about it.
Yes.
If it's important, you, will hear about it.
Banging the table.
Excuse me, sorry.
But here's the thing, right? Let's get to the other two points as well, because we really need to keep going, because we've got a jam-packed show today as well. And I like that point as well. Be intentional about what you allow into your headspace.
Absolutely.
The second one.
The second things, you we become our social orbits. We become who we hang with. You know, that's the second thing. Be intentional about that too. You know, there are people that drain the living life out of you.
Oh, I know.
Because
those
exactly, we
energy
all have some.
Thieves.
And exactly.
You gotta let them go. Yeah. You gotta cut them off.
You know, you gotta cut them off. You know, because it's either they win you to their side of life, or you win them to your side of life, or the two of you just part company.
Okay.
You know, you
I think it's just easier to cut the cord.
Just cut the cord. You know, so you wanna be intentional about who you choose into your social space, into your friends and so on.
Okay. And then third one.
And then the third thing, I mean, Robin Sharma is also huge on this. Double your investment in your personal development.
All right. Robin Sharma, by the way, is the monk who sold his Ferrari.
Yeah, exactly. You want to double your investment in your own personal self, in yourself. I mean, people always have budget for groceries, have budget for gym, have budget for fun. I ask people, do you have a budget for your self-development a month? Are you going to do one course? Are you going to buy one book on whatever it is that you're doing?
Okay.
You know, if you love modeling and so on, buy a book on that once a month to
I'm
read
flattered.
About modeling.
Why
and
are you
so
pointing
on?
At Candy? Like,
you
know? Like, why would she model? why would she model?
Stop,
I don't know,
stop hating.
Okay, I wish your listeners can see. She's
don't
my coach.
Don't come here. I'm in the positive circle. Well, thank you very much.
Yep.
And you know,
so much,
I think those are great. Those are three great things, because last week, what we were really suffering from is the fact that a lot of the things that had gotten to our headspace were what the media was feeding us. That was completely negative. And I was saying to Candy that I had started avoiding a lot of the Sunday papers, a lot of the Sunday television shows, just to avoid that kind of negative headspace getting into my head.
Yep.
And what happened was we were bombed out. We were inundated with all the stuff that was coming out about our country.
Yeah.
And I was just feeling so bummed out, man.
Yeah.
I was so down.
It's crazy. I mean, if you compare South Africans, play a game with America, for example.
Yes.
Your average American, and I mean a guy walking down the street, tend to be very patriotic, tend to be very positive. They think the America is the land of milk and honey. Everything is big and better in America. Mm. You pick up an average South African, a guy on the streets right now.
Yeah, no.
Guess what we tend to do? To be very negative.
Oh, yes.
We complain about crime, corruption. Now, I ask people, do you honestly think that they don't have crime in America, they don't have corruption and so on?
Mm-hmm.
No, they have these problems.
They have
but
Donald
they
Trump.
Are very deliberate about what... You know,
you don't get worse than Donald. Like, hello.
But on that note, what we're going to do is we're going to just play a quick track, and then we're going to come back. One of my favorites, and I just wanted to play this because I wanted you guys to just be turned on to this lady as much as I've been turned on, not only by her, but in her amazing voice and her music. And I mean that literally and figuratively, by the way. Yeah, here we go. What do you think of that, Candy? That's Laura.
Absolutely beautiful.
That's Laura Mvula, by the way. She's a British singer who's married to a Zimbabwean guy, apparently.
Oh, really?
Themba Mvula.
No, but she is absolutely gorgeous as
she
well.
She is lovely.
Wow.
And she's performed. Yeah, I missed her last performance. She performed at the Cape Town Jazz, Cape Town International Jazz Festival a couple of years ago. But I love her music. And I hope one day I can put her music on a soundtrack of a film.
Ooh.
And speaking of film, in the studio with us right now, we've got a young man by the name of Lungelo Khuzwayo, who spent the last 18 years in the United States of America. America.
Hello.
And he's come back from America. He's been directing, you know, and studying directing. Let me just say, hello, Lungelo. How are you doing?
Hello, Mesh.
Or should I say, Gunjan Fit? Do you still remember how to speak the language?
I got nothing as well.
Oh, look at you.
No, you're doing well, my guy. So what were you doing in America for 18 years, guy? Like, the last time I saw you, well, was like a couple of years ago when you came to visit. But we used to be at Vits together not so long ago. 18 years ago when you were at drama school. And then you just went to America for 18 years.
Yeah, I mean, I was at Vits for 3 months. And then my parents called me and told me about this random call they had from an institution, North Park University, that they got my name from my high school, and they wanted to evaluate me for a scholarship. And fast forward about a month later, just before I was about to, don't tell my parents, fail my first English exam, I got the scholarship. So the first thing I did was withdraw from Vets and jump on the first flight away from explaining to my parents what I was doing those first few months at Vets.
Well, but can I just note that you do not have an American accent? I mean, a lot of people go to America for a day and they come back speaking like water and all that. And
yeah,
here
I went for a
speaking,
weekend.
I know.
I
couldn't stand you. My gosh. But
It's something
so
I can.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Ngiyabonga.
You know why? Because he's got that hard Zulu tongue. Like that he can't help it. That is just his accent.
No, come on, 18 years.
No, come on.
You know,
yeah,
people would 18, have come back.
Unless, Tamisha, you would know this.
Yeah.
It's the situation. Maybe he's one of those guys, when he lands in America, the accent comes.
It comes back.
And then when he lands in South Africa, the other accent comes. I mean, you and I would know this, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. We went to a boarding school where we go to school and we sound
and
different.
And then suddenly you're like, yeah. So
and
anyway,
we go home.
Like, when I was at home.
Yeah, you know? Code switching.
It's a different language.
Yeah.
It's code switching. I mean, I think, yeah. I think that's what it is. I'm always aware of where I am and who I'm talking to.
Okay.
And even as a kid, you're always taught to be aware of if elders are around, there's a certain way you speak and conduct yourself.
Yes.
So I've been used to that. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess there is a little bit of, you know, who I'm talking to, I'll play to that. But to me personally, I'm very happy about being a South African and being a Zulu speaker. In fact, my second year in university, that side, I woke up in the middle of the night because it was the first time that the voices in my head, I was dreaming in English instead of Zulu.
Oh, okay.
And I woke up in the middle of the night like, wait, what happened?
What's going
That's
on?
Beautiful.
And I was just like, yo, this is... My life is changing. So,
yeah,
one of many things that changed.
In the past 18 years, one of the major achievements is you acquiring a master's in film directing.
Mm-hmm.
From which institution in the States, by the way? Because you were in Chicago for all these years.
Yeah, so I actually was teaching at Columbia College, Chicago, and I got my master's of fine arts in writing and directing. It was a 2-year degree, and it was all a blur, but I really focused and I honed in on my voice as a creative person, and I'm a director, I'm a writer, I'm on a journey, and sort of like the gentleman what was saying before, I've really decided to invest in myself.
Yeah.
And there was always a goal to get a master of fine arts in film before I came back home.
Yeah.
And it was Anthony Mackie. I watched Anthony Mackie at a film festival, the Chicago International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
They interviewed him. He was the guest celebrity, and they interviewed him for an hour. And that's one of the things that he said about, he was talking about African Americans, but about people who come from disempowered positions, is that we need to learn to invest in ourselves and grow ourselves. So I was very glad that the previous speaker that you have, the motivational speaker, was also talking about that, because, you know, like Gandhi said, you have to be the change that you want to see.
Yeah.
So invest in yourself. Read a book, read books, and really set your goals and, you know, work hard.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, you've done a lot of things that most of us wish we could do, right? You went to America, you got the qualification, you lived there for 18 years, and you're back in South Africa. And the first thing I asked myself was, you know, you're swimming in the wrong direction compared to the rest of us.
Right? That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And before you answer that, the other voice you're hearing, that's Katesh. I don't know if anyone introduced him.
No, we didn't introduce Katesh. Say,
let's say hello to Katesh.
Hi.
He's here with us. How are you doing?
Hey,
I'm good. I'm good.
Hi, okay, now go ahead. Answer it.
We don't know you're here.
Okay, so
I just snuck in. drop by for a few minutes.
Katesh was feeling lonely. But
exactly.
But just so we can re-ask the question, basically is, why did you come back? Because, I mean, America seemed to be the land of milk and honey, especially in film and directing. So why would you come to South Africa when America's really the place to be in that?
As far as we think
in that particular career.
In my directing 2 class when I was undergrad, my teacher, and I actually thanked them for this, and I gave him a book and thanked him for this, to say goodbye when I was leaving a few months ago. And I told him that the most important thing that he taught me, well, first of all, he gave me the confidence and made me feel like I belonged in directing, when before then some fellow classmates and teachers didn't make me feel like I belonged. But the thing that he said to me, and he said it all in one quick phrase, but it was a two-piece phrase. He said, "Lungelo, you can never do what Hollywood does." And then for that second or half a second, I was like, then I'm hopeless. But he said, and he was more eloquent than that. He said something like, you'll never beat Hollywood at their game.
Okay.
But they can never do what you do as well.
Huh.
And it was a very empowering statement as a young, black, non-American, you know, guy that you can't, I mean, you can, anybody can go to Hollywood, that's great, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the reason why I'm back here is because with that statement and other experiences, I realized that if you want to tell South African stories, we're very unique, very beautiful country that has a lot of pain and things that we still need to work through, but we laugh, we cry, we're happy, we're everything. And I didn't go to Hollywood because especially as a writer director, but in any, you know, field in filmmaking, it's very tough to make it. And there's a lot of people out there who go. For every Brad Pitt who went there with a couple of $100 and his car and everything that he owned in his car and making it, you know, for every one of those Brad Pitts, there's like a million of us who are really wishing and hoping to get there. And it's very tough. But the reason why I didn't go there is because just to try and go and make it is hard enough.
Yes.
But if you want to tell different stories about, not necessarily political stories, but stories about marginalized people and marginalized cultures and stories that show the diversity, the real diversity of the world, then it's even harder because Hollywood doesn't know how to deal with or market those stories because Hollywood is afraid to offend some people about XYZ. But we live in a very bright, colorful, ugly, scary, beautiful world. And I always wanted to tell South African stories. So from a very early age, I knew that I'll be personally and professionally better coming home and trying to learn more about who I am and who my people are and telling those stories and launching a South African or African platform so that we can tell our own stories.
And on that note, we're going to just take a break and come back. When we come back, we're going to find out how Lungelo feels about our stories that he's been able to see since he's been back. Don't go anywhere.
One holiday road trip multiplied by a four-year-old plus his twin brother multiplied by plus multiplied by,
and you can expect heavy delays on the highway,
plus
I need to read.
multiplied by
are we there yet?
Plus
plus I dropped my ice cream
plus to the power of
recalculating your route
equals the irritation of just one single mosquito buzzing around your head. Fortunately, you plus peaceful sleep room spray equals death to that irritation.
All right, we're back. We were speaking to Lungelo about his experience while he was in the United States. And I love what you said just now. You want to come back to South Africa and give a platform. In fact, tell stories from where you come from your perspective and your experience as a human being. You've been back now a couple of months, and I suppose you've had an opportunity to take a look around and see what it is that we're doing in this country that might not filter through to that side of the world. And one big movie that just came out recently is Happiness is a Four-Letter Word, which has done amazingly at the South African box office.
And people are loving it.
And people are loving it. I mean, it made 12 million rand, which is fantastic for a South African movie, especially a rom-com in this very tough market. And you went to see it recently. Just tell me, in terms of how watching a South African film and seeing your people speaking your language, how did that make you feel when you're watching that, you know? And the aesthetic and the culture coming through at you.
I thought from an aesthetic point of view, in terms of camera work, in terms of production quality, it was a very high value product, and it was, you know, a proudly South African. And I'm glad that it did well in the box office. And I went to see it. I went to see it on opening week, and it was just nice to see South Africans telling our stories. And, you know, showing the world, you know, that we can do it. And production value goes a long way. Yeah. And clearly, we've come a long way, and we're improving and growing. And that movie really showed that, you know, we can compete on the international stage.
And the other thing is a lot of young people will say that we don't go to see South African movies because they're always telling stories of the struggle and you don't want to see that. But this movie is about, it's contemporary. Yeah, you know. You young people.
Okay, sorry, old people in studio.
But this film is contemporary. It's about young women,
yes,
living in Johannesburg,
looking
and their experience
love.
Of love, work, yeah, you know, marriage,
it's
everything.
Yeah.
Did you feel that you got a sense of what is happening in South Africa
right now,
especially in Joburg,
yeah,
from watching that film?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the three different characters, they all have their own backstory and come from different professional and personal backgrounds. And also just, you know, the stories that are about women, that empower women, that's,
yes,
very rare. So that was very refreshing and great to hear,
yeah,
from a female perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I really enjoyed about the film, because I was going to say, one of the things that I liked about the film was not only the story, but kind of how the story was told from a point of view of the three ladies.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't only male bashing, I suppose. It was a sense of like...
We can do other things, excuse me.
Yeah, okay, you keep telling,
wow,
yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But what do you think our take on relationships was? Because that's the one thing, like, I always go, oh, you know, what's happening with that? You know, in South African... a lot of the time, storytelling,
really.
Yeah.
You know what, in terms of relationships, I really enjoyed, I forget the characters' names, but the main characters... love interest, I don't want to give away too much of the film, but the,
yeah,
main character's love interest was a very unusual and diverse character, if you think about it. Single father who has issues with his baby mama, if you will, but a very three-dimensional and very complex character that is neither negative or positive, mostly positive,
yeah,
but also they went, the film makes him afraid to show his baggage.
Yes.
And that's very important, to have realistic characters who have good,
yeah,
and bad. And that's part of the whole makeup, and be brave enough to say, hey, this is how you break stereotypes, by,
yeah,
going to the stereotype, but there's so much more to this person than just that one negative aspect.
Yeah, it's very accurate,
I mean,
to life.
The one question I have is about the content. I mean, you're obviously coming back from a writer's perspective. Do you, mm-hmm, think the content that we have and it being produced is good enough? Or do you think, you know, in terms of writing,
mm-hmm,
there could be room for improvement? Because I've heard that same view, that the content that's coming out perhaps is not good enough,
yeah,
does not have international appeal. I mean, this is a question, and I just want to get your take on that.
One of the things that I thought there was a little bit of room for improvement in terms of the film was in content, was in writing, and that's something that I'm very focused on myself as a storyteller, in terms of how we explore and develop themes and ideas.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, Hollywood has been around since, you know, the late 1800s. They've been around,
yeah,
for over 100 years. We just got here.
Yeah.
I mean, our film industry, that people don't realize, is
yeah,
almost as old as Hollywood. We made some of the earliest films ever. It's just that what happened was in the mid-19 whatevers, our film industry was taken over by,
yeah,
what the government wanted,
yeah,
to tell us. And,
yeah,
then, of course, they wouldn't allow television to come out and just be television because,
yeah,
they were afraid of what it might be able to say and what,
yeah,
people might have access to.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think that retarded our development.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think from 1994 is when you can,
yes,
judge our real,
exactly,
film industry,
exactly,
developing.
But,
yes,
that would speak to your point of,
yeah,
what you just said, that we,
yeah,
are relatively new.
We were
in
new.
Those,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And especially as a free market economy.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So these new voices, we need time and space to develop. And I think that in terms of writing, there's room for growth and development. I think that being able to create three-dimensional character arcs where you can see the character slowly changing and evolving, that at the end, when they conquer and win at the climax,
yes,
you can believe,
yeah,
that, you know, that person was a realistic situation. That's where the beats, the tiny,
yes,
right now we can write a good 10 minutes, but looking to each second, what's happening each second, how the character changes and grows, that,
yeah,
quality will come with time and energy.
Yeah, I think
there's
I think you're 100% right. My view is that if we get the content right, and that's,
mm-hmm,
that's the starting point, you get,
mm-hmm,
that content, the right writing, those,
mm-hmm,
stories,
yeah,
then all of a sudden jump out at you and get noticed.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you cut corners there, then,
yeah,
no matter what you do with production,
yeah,
no matter what you do,
yes,
with the other things on the side,
yes,
it's ultimately that great,
yes,
story that will, you know,
yes,
come out and actually showcase what South Africa has to offer. So that's I'm glad you've come back with that kind of skill, and hopefully can inject a
into
different view
and
almost create better stories.
And I'm glad you said that, because to me, going back to the quote that I said before, I can never do what Hollywood does, but they can never do what we do.
Yeah.
Because we are South Africans and we've gone through the good, the bad, and everything else in between.
Yes.
And those nuances of what it's like to be South African, everybody knows about apartheid.
Yeah.
But to know the daily life of being post apartheid South Africa, those nuances come in that script and in that writing. Because it doesn't matter, you can have the biggest stars like Dumisho Masha in your movie.
Ooh.
If that script is flat, you know, he's a magician, he's a wizard, but he's got a. There's no wizardry, there's no sangam that can help him to make a magical film.
I understand. Then Tamisha's going to have to do some kind of a nude scene.
Stop this?
And then the movie would take off.
You know what? That always helps. Every time I've been in a movie or TV show and I needed ARs, just I have to take something off.
I hope you guys could see what's happening in studio. Like, the egos are so out of control, I'm almost out the studio.
But here's the thing. Recently, you also went on set for South African Soapy. We won't mention the name.
Yeah.
Just to take a look around and see how we shoot things.
Production,
What was your impression of that? And where do you think it could be, where what you're talking about could come into effect, how we can improve and things like that?
Yeah, that was very exciting to be live on set and see how people were doing their thing. And what really impressed me was just how the diversity in terms of racial and gender diversity on set. That was very interesting.
You don't get that much in Hollywood, I must say.
Yeah.
I once went on the set of The Bold and it was like, okay, this is like 1970 something South Africa. The other.
So that was refreshing just to hear the different languages being spoken.
Yes.
And then also, you know, there's a quote, I forget who said this quote, that it takes a small army and some money to make a movie. You know? And to see an army of diverse and working together to build this thing was very refreshing and very wonderful. And it's a very fast-paced environment, but people are very professional, people are very prepared, and, you know, people knew how to conduct themselves. And it was just very nice to see that, because I think that in terms of production and the how to do things, you know, we're there.
Wow.
We're there.
Can I tell you that? Literally, when you opened your mouth, I did not think you were going to say positive things.
Oh,
I have to be honest.
I was a little bit scared myself.
I was thinking you were going to be like, you know, it was a bit chaotic. We are getting there slowly but surely. And, you know, we will get there.
Yeah, 20 years maybe. The next generation.
Right. That's honestly what I expected to hear. But I'm so glad that you actually said something so positive and that it was a working machine.
Yeah.
Or the negative coming.
The thing is, I was saying to a colleague of mine, and, you know, I've been back in a soapy environment for the past couple of months now.
Yeah.
Since last year. And at first it was really tough. But I was saying to a colleague of mine that I take my hat off to people who do soap in this country, because the amount of pressure and speed that you have to work at and still deliver a product that's, you know, viewable.
A great performance.
It is amazing. And I take my hat off to all the actors, the crew, the directors, everyone, the writers who do their thing, because what they're just able to give us is amazing in the little time that they have.
Yeah.
But can I just jump in there and just say that it's so important that people hear this. What you guys are saying is vital for the youth especially, because everyone looks at this production that's 30 minutes on screen and they think that the work that goes into it is like 30 minutes. You know,
exactly.
But it takes a long time to get
a
product like
time.
That.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, one of my colleagues today was saying that yesterday she had 8 scenes to do, right? One after the other. And then... Yeah. She got there at 7 in the morning, left work, and got home at 7:30 in the evening. Today was back at 7 in the morning, had another 6 scenes, one after the other, before lunchtime.
It's crazy.
And you're
crazy.
Like, how? And she's got 2 kids, you know, and she's a single mom.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, if we just got that financial injection, the things that we'd be able to do, that's why... Hollywood and the UK, they come here and they do their things here, because they know that we've got world class crew and we're cheaper, and we've got world class cars, people who can handle in a more relaxed environment. And that's where I want to take us now, Kotesh, because you know, one of the things that you wrote about not so long ago was an article about you know, when it comes to financing film, there's legislation now, especially in the Tax Act, that can help us with that.
Yeah, I mean, that was an article where I was quoted in, but essentially, you know, a lot of the movies that I made at the moment, there's a lot of support from the DTI in terms of providing rebates for people who make movies, as long as a certain criteria. I think you've got to spend $2.5 million and above, and 25% own contribution. But that's the DTI.
Yes.
What Tamishu is really referring to is in our tax legislation, there's a section 12O, and literally we came across it, which essentially allows you to have your profits from a movie for the period of 10 years to be tax-free.
What?
Now I sat back and I said, there's very few places in your tax act that you could find where something is tax-free. Yeah. I mean, it almost doesn't exist,
you
right?
You read that right.
This
right?
is hidden somewhere. I did. I even met someone from the expert from the receiver, and I had to sit down. I said, listen, is this true? Mm. Can profits from a movie be tax-free for 10 years? And that's a great little section. I mean, we've always had some sections in our legislation that does make special provision for filmmaking. And this was one that came out in 2012, and so it will run till 2022, and essentially for 10-year period. And but there are conditions, of course.
Okay.
And the one condition which was in there was it had to be approved by the Film Foundation. I think there's a provision where somebody, there has to be an
National
agency.
National Film and Video Foundation, which
correct.
Is the NFVF.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got to then obviously approve of, give you some sort of certification that this is in fact a movie. And if you meet the various criteria, you can be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get this tax-free provision on income. Now that's fantastic from a return perspective, right?
Yeah.
Because whoever, and by the way, this rolls back to whoever invests in a movie.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. This is for whoever invests in the movie,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Okay. So that is the positive part. I mean, it's out there. People have known about it, and literally, I came across it as doing some work in the movie space, and really wanted to see, you know, what can be done. So there's two prongs. There's one is the rebates from DTI. The second is this tax-free haven that you can almost have.
Mm.
But it makes one fundamental assumption.
Yes.
That you're in fact making profit. Because if you're not making profit, you're not going to pay any tax anyway.
Let's go back there.
So let's go back to the beginning.
Before we throw a party.
And say, well, you have to make money first, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
So the element of making money is having paid back what you've invested, and then there's some extra, right?
Yes.
And it does make provision for a few years because, you know, if you're lucky enough to have your movie sold multiple times, shown in different places multiple times, where you can make more over a period of time.
Yeah.
And that's why the period is so important. It gives you a long period so you can do this. But it comes back to, it has to be profitable. And I think the numbers, you know, in South Africa, if I just jogging my memory, we make about, I think, between 20 and 30 movies a year, somewhere around there. And I think the figure is at 5%. Are successful, right?
Yeah, at best.
At
best.
Those
so
are
what's,
not
what's
good.
Successful? Sorry, just define for me success.
In other words, provide you a return. In other words, you get the money back.
You get your money
from
back.
What you profitable money but back from what you put in.
And
so if
right.
you've invested, you get that back and you make money.
Hollywood figures though aren't much better. I mean, I think they're around there as well. The thing is just that five. I mean, out of every 10 movies, they're lucky if one makes any money back.
Are
right?
you serious?
But that one that makes the money back pays for those
other
nine, and then the next. Nine that they're going to lose money.
But they use a portfolio approach, right? It's a portfolio.
Which is what we call a slate in the industry.
Okay. You know, so you've got a whole lot of things.
You've got a whole lot of films.
In other words, a whole lot of irons in the fire,
and
a few don't burn, and one takes off, obviously, and that's enough to cover the rest. So they do take risk.
Yeah.
And but they have a bit of a formula too. You know, I think their formula revolves around, in terms of studios, who the directors they will work with. You can add in on that. I mean, which sort of stars they need to have. Those things play into what drives a successful movie. And and there are some independents that do come out as well that do particularly well. But the key is distribution, right? It's about getting the product out.
It's really about getting the product on the shelf, right?
Mm. There's a rumor about, I saw it in a documentary, Don Cheadle talked about this, there's a rumor of a scale that actually exists. It's still a rumor
that exists.
That tells you it's an equation that if you have this kind of actor, this kind of plot, this kind of theme, this kind of whatever, is a nudity there, this director, whatever.
Yeah.
Then you put all those elements together. This is
a guarantee box office.
That makes so much sense.
But you know what? I asked myself the same question. You know, so I heard you say something, commenting positively about the soapy sort of market, right? Uh-huh. That we do this so well. That's one thing we always never capitalize on strengths. You know, if we really doing well in that scenario, right? Should we not be doing 10 more of that? In other words, channel the investment into the place you can get the most return, right?
Yeah.
So if you're very good at this machinery of soapies or creating something, you know, I think we kind of do that.
And yes. I'm sorry to jump in there, please. Candy, but I just wanted to add that the particular issue with our South African industry when it comes to television and film is it's still owned by, I suppose, the broadcasters more than anyone, because it's about who puts the money in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it doesn't work in their favor to build a star kind of rating, like a scale that would then be available to anybody. So therefore, you have a director, a theme, this kind of actor. And once you put that kind of scale together, then people can sort of demand certain things. And what happens is the broadcasters have traditionally wanted to make all the profits and everyone else must make nothing. So it was always a win-lose situation with our corporates. And if we just turn that and change it and said, what if we had a win-win situation? Things would really turn around and things, I think, would really start to work.
Yeah.
And it would be what you're talking about. Because even producers would be incentivized to do the best work they possibly can. As a producer at the moment, if you're making a film and honestly MNET or CakeNet decides to put money into it, you know that you've immediately lost your intellectual property.
Yeah.
So
why
the heck should I bother putting this money on the screen? I'm just going to put it in my back pocket if you're a good businessman.
Okay. Yes.
And until we change that, we're going to have a problem, because now when we put the product on the shelf, we don't have a superior product.
Right.
We have
those
things missing, because what Lungela was talking about the beats, and you were saying yourself, before you have, you even go and shoot the film, make sure that your script is perfect.
Yes.
But if you're going to have a situation where you're trying to get the cheapest script writers out there, or you're underpaying script writers, you're not going to get the best script.
You get what you pay for.
So already you have a
weak
product.
Foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, you have a weak foundation.
I mean, in the article, I think I allude to the fact that you essentially need a mix of the creative and we need to add a little bit of business savvy sort of financial skills in that, because a lot of times, you know, it comes down to what are we making, who is the market, and then ultimately about distribution, right? So unless you've got that formula down, then you have a situation that you're actually unsure. You don't know how much to invest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you invest in a product that you may not get distribution of. I think some of the most successful movies we've done and have surprised me, where they've struggled internationally, where their ultimate profit, really the big money,
comes
from an international distribution, right?
Because that's where the money comes.
Because we have a challenge even locally, right? We don't have the confidence.
Small.
The market is very small. Local people have a lot to choose from. You walk into a movie house and essentially you're going to spend, you got X amount to spend, and then you choose where should I go.
And star quality pulls you.
Yeah. And the fact is there's so many new movies coming out that you're almost drawn to an international product versus a local product.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
But there is a little bit of a space. The space is we don't have theaters in every segment of the population.
True.
And that is one of the areas where I think if you had greater distribution or greater theaters, or where the market is slightly different, where a local product might be more attractive.
Yes. Mm.
There's an opportunity there. But but that is very difficult to do when your movie industry now is really in shopping malls, right? I mean that's really it.
Can I just say quickly about the scales and the formulas? While these things might exist and they're important, especially from a business point of view, from the producing side, at the same time, though, you mentioned independent films that come and surprise us and surprise Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important to also allow creative, I'm a director, so I'm a creative and very, you know, my artistic sense. I think it's very important that people allow new voices and different types of stories to be told to sort of expand the audience's appetite and, and view of storytelling.
It's about building a culture as well.
But
here's my thing. I think of what you guys have said. Here's one thing. Here's what I would recommend. Don't spend more money on film. Don't do that. Don't put more money into a budget. But what you do is allow everyone the same amount of risk and reward. So therefore say, we're still going to have budgets that are not necessarily bigger because that's not going to help. However, should the movie do well, everyone has a chance to do well from that film as well. And then from there, expand the distribution chain, if you will. And allow the film to play internationally, because if it does well in South Africa, it will do well internationally. And how you guarantee that it might do well in South Africa is you allow the filmmaker to see the schedule, that to share the schedule rather with with the exhibitor, like your Stokinico or your New Metro, and say, look, we all want the same things. We all want to do business. We all want to make money. So if you have a big Hollywood blockbuster coming out at the same time, don't put my movie out there, because none of us are going to make any money. And it doesn't help either of us.
And that's timing, right?
And that's timing. And then thirdly, understand that in places where there are no distribution chains for films, like the townships, put film theaters there so that people start going back to the theaters, but also understand the power of mobile devices and that people are watching films from those, from video on demand and that sort of thing, and say, it's okay because our budgets were smaller. So if we're giving the film away for a R5 a pop or a download, people can still get it without feeling the need to download it for free. But at the same time, without feeling like it's too expensive. And then, because for every film that you make, for every R1 that you make, you got to make at least R4 back to be break even. You actually might start seeing that we can make money from film. That's just my two cents.
What a show. My goodness. I feel like I've learned so much.
I think so. You might be onto something.
Wow, no. I've learned a lot today, guys. Like, my brain is just like...
Is your brain frying
overdrive.
Right now?
I'm like, no wonder Sheikh said I must just do modeling, because this is the speaking stuff.
Oh, okay, you just listen to your CD, okay, Candy? I think that's what we need to do for you. So I think with that, guys, it was a great show. Thanks for joining
us. Awesome show.
It's always good to have you in the studio.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Lungelo, we wish you all the best in whatever it is that you're doing.
We're so excited. We are so excited.
What are your plans for the next year?
I'm currently teaching, writing, I'm teaching directing at the university level, and I am going to get into the independent filmmaking market and try and write and direct some South African stories.
Wow, we're excited to see what you're going to bring onto the market. I think, it's going to be amazing.
When are we going to get another blog from you?
Oh, wow. Okay, the pressure. I will write it today, guys. Thanks.
You don't have to write it today. Don't, like, rush the blog. You heard what we said about writing. It's
always
very important.
Produce quality work.
Yeah, so when are we seeing some new quality work?
I'll do it by this week. Now that you've requested, I have to.
All right, we'll catch you guys next week. And just in case you didn't know, this was the weekly mashup with myself, Dumisha Masha.
And Candace Mama.
We're out of here.
Have a good one.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you. Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.